Up next, we turn from the civil war in Sri Lanka to the trans liberation movement in the U.S. In 1993, transgender activist Leslie Feinberg published her first fictional novel, Stone Butch Blues, which tells the story of a butch person growing up in pre-Stonewall Riots America. Stone Butch Blues was considered to be groundbreaking on the topic of gender and received accolades, including the Stonewall Book Award in 1994. In this segment you are about to hear, Feinberg is giving a speech on the complexity of the relationship between the trans and women's liberation movements at the National Women's Studies Association. The narrator you are about to hear is Frieda Worden. She recorded and edited the speech for the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Is that a woman or a man? That's the question that troubles the heroine of the novel Stone Butch Blues, in which a non-feminine little girl grows up to be a butch dyke. Driven by the world's rejection, she has her breasts removed and tries to live as a man. Finally, she accepts her destiny as a he-she or intersexual person, whose best friend is a male-to-female transvestite. Leslie Feinberg, the author of Stone Butch Blues, resembles her heroine. In June 1995, she appeared at the National Women's Studies Association in Oklahoma City, looking like a young, elegant man, from her blonde flat-top haircut to her stylish sport coat and men's Italian shoes. The message she came to deliver was highly controversial, calling on the women's movement to embrace transgender persons as sisters. The arguments against this proposition included the idea that men cannot become women just by mutilating their own genitals, and that women sometimes need women-only space to be safe in. The arguments in favor were marshaled by Leslie Feinberg herself.
Mine is not a voice that has ever been heard before at NWSA, or even in the second wave of feminism in this country. And I think, as someone who has not been allowed to be part of the women's liberation movement for the last 20 years or more, that I am in perhaps the best position to defend it. Because you see, I don't want to join into the right-wing attacks on the women's movement for the mistakes that we make. Movements are made up of individuals and we make mistakes. And besides, we're standing today on the shoulder of everything that went before. But there is no contradiction between defending our movements against the attack by the right wing from without and challenging our movements from within to be more inclusive and diverse and open to change. I am someone who should be part of both the women's movement and the trans liberation movement or transgender liberation movement. I know that they are related because I suffer both the oppressions. They are intertwined. And our populations, our communities, and our movements partially overlap. I'm in the part that overlaps, and like someone who has a foot in one of each of two rowboats, I'd personally not like to see them go in the opposite direction. The transgender or trans liberation movement is a young movement. It's still defining itself and forging its own terms and its own demands, just like every movement does in a young stage. But it is made up of people who identify themselves as transsexual men and women, as cross-dressers, as transgendered, as drag queens and kings, as butch women, as femme men, as androgyne, shapeshifters, two-spirit, gender benders, gender blenders, gender outlaws, all. I think that our movement, the trans liberation movement, has a great deal at stake to fight for undocumented workers everywhere in this country and against illegal borders because of the kind that we, above all, should realize the kind of toll that illegal borders take or that making people illegal takes. People who are under Western law, born in this society, a doctor glances at you at an infant for a second and makes the most important life decision that you could possibly make right there on the spot. And by law, you're just supposed to live with that. And my transsexual sisters and brothers cross that border, that man-made border of Western legal sex that they were assigned. You're also assigned a gender expression at birth. That's what those subtle pink and blue Pampers are all about. Girls will grow up to be feminine and boys will grow up to be masculine. Well, those of us who've crossed those borders of gender are also outlaws. And then there are my intersexual family members who would prefer to be called intersexual than hermaphrodite. There's an entire human anatomical spectrum, but under Western law, when a child is born intersexual, it is a crisis, and surgeons are rousted from bed in order to generally mutilate infants at a day or two or a week old who have no consent about what's being done to their bodies. We don't have to leave the borders of the U.S. to fight against genital mutilation. And in my research for the book that I'm working on, Transgender Warriors, I have discovered that what we think of today as a binary expression of gender, of feminine and masculine, although that gender has been expressed differently in diverse historical periods and cultures and nationalities and regions and classes, there appears to have always been gender variation in the human population. And if you look at the creation stories on every continent, you can see that intersexuality is also a very ancient part of our spectrum of our bodies. And sex change is not a high-tech phenomenon, but sex change accomplished both by surgical techniques and by group social acceptance is a very ancient path. What is different is that although all this has always existed, we have not always been hated and hunted and reviled. And yet, we still walk around under the weight of believing that the way things are now is the way they've always been. That every society, every person deep down, it's our human nature that's responsible for this dog-eat-dog world. But when we use the word feminism, we have to remember feminism, or the women's liberation movement, was not just one body of thought, it was currents of thought. It was like tributaries rushing towards a larger body of water. And one of those currents was a material view of human history that did not just talk about the rise of patriarchy in human history, but the rise of the division of one class of humanity over another, of a patriarchal class society. And it is at that nexus, that liminal moment in history, that we find laws arising which partition the sexes. You cannot blur the sex of man or woman, because how could you uphold inequality? If a woman can become a man, then a slave can become a slave owner, or a serf can become a landlord. The oppression of trans people and of women and of those who love people of the same sex arose in relative historical tandem. And our struggles have never been more linked than they are today. Many of you know that I have spoken very widely in the last few years about just that point where our two movements overlap, and particularly about the inclusion of transsexual women. That is the point at which our dialogue has to begin, because there's fear around it. And whenever there's fear, there's not an open, genuine exchange and dialogue. But the relationship of the trans liberation movement and the women's liberation movement also affects people who are transgendered, like myself. It affects whether or not butch women and femme women are going to be part of this movement, or whether women can allow their beards to grow and still feel comfortable at women's events. You know, I'm not the first trans person to have ever been a part of the NWSA. I'm the first to have ever spoken out in our own name. That's the difference. The entire discussion of the relationship between transgender and the women's movement rests on the pivotal question, how we define woman. I believe, first and foremost, that a biological definition of woman is a dangerous direction for the women's movement to take, and that it marks a definite break with the theory and practices of the second wave of women's liberation in this country. Biology is not destiny. That was the truth that the movement was built on. One is not born a woman, de Beauvoir wrote. One becomes a woman. The heart of that truth is that no individual should be limited in life due to their birth biology. But the concept of woman has become increasingly linked to a number of bodily or biological experiences of oppression, like rape, incest, forced pregnancy, and battering. But if we allow that to become the definition of womanhood, women are not the only ones who suffer the horrors of rape, or incest, or sexual humiliation, or brutality. What is a more common bodily experience for the majority of women on this planet are hauling water and carrying firewood and working on assembly lines. That's a class experience. Do all women share a common oppression? As white women, do we share an identical oppression with women of color? Do rich women and poor women suffer the same oppression? What about the hardships and the experiences of disabled women and single mothers and lesbians? Women endure many different experiences and oppressions and joys. And the sum total of those experiences are just a part of how many ways there are to be woman in this society. What about different experiences based on gender expression? The difference of growing up as a feminine or masculine girl in this society. Masculine girls and women face terrible condemnation and brutality, including sexual violence, for crossing that boundary of what's acceptable for women's behavior. On the other hand, very feminine girls and women also endure a very high degree of sexual violence and humiliation and harassment, and a great deal of woman-hating resides in the attitudes about femininity. Generalizations based on bigotry like the higher the heels, the lower the IQ. The tighter the skirt, the looser the morals. Every woman has a stake in fighting this gender phobia. Of course, femme women are also not assumed to have a very high consciousness about fighting women's oppression. The oppression of feminine men is very important to me since I came of age together with my drag queen sisters. I've heard them criticized for mocking women's oppression by imitating femininity to extreme. I've seen a great deal of gender variance among my drag queen sisters, and there's also a great deal of anti-femme attitude behind that. There are women in this society who range from feminine to androgynous to masculine, and men who range from masculine to androgynous to feminine. And rather than two polar opposites, we have a circle of gender freedom, and everyone has the right to find their place on it and to move. I understand why feminists are angry about women's oppression. I am too. But I think we'd be aiming our guns in the wrong direction at drag queens, not taking into account gender oppression. As a rape survivor, I understand the need for safe space for women, free from potential violence and sexist harassment. But fear of gender variance can't allow itself to be cloaked in women's safety issues. If so, it degrades our genuine safety issues. I'll give you an example, bathrooms. And you all know what I mean. Now, when a man walks into a women's bathroom, women have a right to be concerned. Why is he here? Does he fluster? Does he look embarrassed? Or is he full of malice? You grow up learning to read body language as a girl to know if you're safe or in danger. Now, what happens when a masculine woman walks into a woman's bathroom? The elbow nudging and the eye rolling and the excuse me, do you know which bathroom you're in? That is not fear of a man in the bathroom. That's gender phobia, and it can't allow itself to be cloaked under our real genuine safety issues. And ask yourself, if you went into the women's bathroom and you saw a teenage drag queen putting on lipstick in front of the mirror, are you in danger? And if you call the police on that person or force them to use the men's room, will that person be safe? If segregation of the bathrooms is going to really be about more than genitals, maybe the signs ought to read men's and sexually and gender oppressed. Or even better, toilet. defending the inclusion of my transsexual sisters in women's space also does not threaten our safety as women. In the AIDS movement, for example, we fought against the racist and bigoted characterization of high-risk groups. We fought for and won a definition of high-risk behaviors. If we're going to talk about women's safety issues, it's not about any woman, it's about our behavior. Safe space for women means objectively fighting racist behavior that is dangerous to women of color. It means fighting the kind of behavior that is dangerously insensitive to our disabled sisters. That's what safe space is about. Transsexual women are not men in sheep's clothing who are trying to infiltrate women's space. There have always been transsexual women who have helped to build the women's movement, and yes, even the NWSA. And they want to be, because they live in a woman-hating society and face that oppression day in and day out, they want to be in women's space for the same reason every other woman does. If the boundaries around woman become trenches, what happens to intersexual people, of whom there are some at this conference? Can we really fix a policy that is so clear about who was born woman? And there are many people like myself who were born female, but get hassled for not being woman enough. We've been accused of exuding male energy. Male energy. Now that's a frighteningly subjective border to patrol. If we are going to decide who is a real woman, who is a real woman enough to be empowered to decide? And how should the checkpoints be established? Would we all strip? How do you know that vagina was not newly constructed? Would we show our birth certificates? How do you know it hasn't been updated? DNA tests? The Olympics had so many false negatives, positives, they went back to watching people pee in a cup as the drug test and the sex test. I understand that it took the tremendous social upheavals of the women's movement to even mark the boundaries of women's oppression. When I was growing up, if you said women were oppressed, somebody said, oh, why, honey, because some guy opens a door for you? You girls have it lucky. You don't even have to work. But the gift of the women's liberation movement was that it revealed to us that there was an institutionalized mechanism of oppression in this society. It is not your lipstick that oppresses me. It is not how you define your sex or gender. There's a built-in system that oppresses us that is hell-bent on keeping us fighting each other instead of fighting for change. Yeah.
You just heard an excerpt of a speech given by Leslie Feinberg, author of the groundbreaking novel Stone Butch Blues. Feinberg was speaking at the National Women's Studies Association in 1995. The full speech was originally aired on the Women's International News Gathering Service in July and can be found on their website, www.wings.org.